All right, well, we start a new week here, and conference realignment is the name of the game. It has reached a point, I would say a tipping point here, with the Big East and the ACC and the Syracuse and Pittsburgh moves, and wanted to bring on the man who broke that news, our own Brett McMurphy of CBSSports.com, you know, national columnist, football writer. Brett, thank you so much for coming on, and how are you doing?
Good, Matt. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Tell me how it feels to have your news broken to ACC Commissioner John Swofford. I mean, apparently he found out that, or was it Marinato, that Syracuse and Pittsburgh were leaving. He didn't even realize that was happening.
Yeah, well, you know, Pete Thamel Friday night wrote that Syracuse and Pittsburgh were having talks with the ACC, and you know, I started calling around and checking with different sources and so forth, and then I guess after the fact, I found out that when I reached out to John Marinato, that apparently that was how he first discovered that Pitt and Syracuse were actually leaving the league. You know, as I reported Saturday morning, following up on what Pete had reported Friday, that not only were they talking, but they had actually submitted their letters of application, which obviously is a huge step. You know, the ACC said that 10 schools had been reaching out to them. So a number of schools talk with conferences. That's not uncommon, but to actually have the next step that they had submitted letters of application was huge. And that obviously meant one thing, that they were gone. You know, you don't submit a letter of application unless you've been told you will be accepted into the league. So it certainly moved quickly. And I think what was interesting is how quiet Pitt and Syracuse were able to keep this from folks throughout the league, and it also kind of shows, I think, pretty much their disrespect for the league, and that they weren't up front with the league, letting them know about their intentions. But I guess if we've learned anything through all this conference realignment the past couple years, is that nobody trusts anybody. And they're basically going to do what's best for themselves, and everybody's looking out for number one.
How quickly did this happen? Because from the outsider perspective, no one really had any idea about this as late as Friday night, and then it's official on Sunday morning. Were gears grinding behind the scenes for the past year, for the past 3 months? From what your perspective is, how long did it really take, start to end, for Syracuse and Pittsburgh to decide we're up and out?
Well, we asked, you know, Swofford and the Pitt and Syracuse officials were on a conference call Sunday morning, and they were asked that question, and basically they wouldn't reveal that answer. I would speculate that it's been going on for months. They don't just decide overnight, hey, we're going to add these teams. Obviously, they looked into them. They did the research, their homework, you know, looked at all these things to see if it was a good move. You know, how quickly it came about was certainly a surprise, but it wasn't that they just decided last week, hey, we need to add two teams. How about these two teams? I'm sure this has been going on for months. And I think that's what's really, really irks the Big East a lot, is because, you know, Syracuse is a founding member. Pittsburgh's been in the league since 82. And, to have them do this basically behind their back, and not give them a heads up that they were looking to do something, you know, makes their departure even that more devastating to them.
Now, you had said that the application process is all but a formality when it gets down to it. There was a report today that, you know, Villanova is also applying or has sent in its application to the ACC. Now, obviously, that's not a D1 football school. I personally can't see why the ACC would accept Villanova in, but do you have any connections with that, and any information you could reveal to us about what Villanova might be doing, or if that report is even credible?
Well, I mean, I didn't see the report, and so I don't want to say if it's accurate or not. What I would say, based on what you told me, is that I'm sure that several schools have contacted the ACC about joining the league. Now, you know, you can call them up and say you want to join the league, but they need to want you to join the league for it to work. It takes two to tango. So if they've officially submitted a letter of application, it's not like a job form where you can, you walk into the ACC offices and say, I want to apply. So, you know, certainly the ACC has to tell them that, yeah, they would be a potential member, and then they would follow up by giving them all the information they needed. You know, a lot of academic background, obviously financial numbers and budgets and those sort of things. But, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't want to dismiss what someone else reported. But certainly I would be shocked if the ACC added Villanova, because their football team is not even Big East quality. So right. Why would the ACC want to add them?
All right. Our colleague Dennis Dodd writes in his Monday column, really a scathing column toward leadership in college athletics across the board. But he wrote the Big East now teeters on the brink of death, and that the Big 12 isn't far behind. Do you agree with that?
Actually, I think the best thing to happen to the Big East is if Texas and Texas Tech go to the Pac-12. What that'll do is that will mean Texas Tech. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State will go to the Pac-16 and basically will kill the Big 12. So then what will happen is the Big East will then look to merge with what's left of the Big 12. So what's left of the Big East and what's left of the Big 12 would merge together. I suggested calling the conference the Big Band-Aid, because that's basically what they're going to be doing.
Right.
So I think that would work. And the question is, will the basketball schools, the non-football schools in the Big East, the eight members, would they split away from the conference and just have their own conference as a basketball-only conference? And another factor is, you know, how's Notre Dame involved in all this? You know, I contend that Notre Dame will remain an independent until the end of time, as long as the Big East Conference is around for it to put its Olympic sports. If there is no Big East Conference around and Notre Dame has nowhere to put its Olympic sports, then I think Notre Dame will then have to join a conference. And obviously the two most likely candidates would be the Big Ten or maybe even the ACC. So in a weird kind of way, if the ACC kills the Big East, it would certainly increase their chances to get Notre Dame. But I think ultimately if Notre Dame ever does join a league, I just get the vibe that it would be the Big Ten.
And Notre Dame is just a completely separate, like, that's its own entity of itself of a topic. All right, so Texas, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. You think they're inevitably going to wind up in the Pac-12, make it the Pac-16. And if you think that's going to happen, when? What's the timetable, the perspective you have on this right now?
Well, the Texas and Oklahoma Board of Regents are meeting on Monday separately, and basically there should be some news to come out of that. Whether they, I think probably they'll just say that they give the presidents of each universities to act on their own and to do what's in their best interest as far as conference realignment. You know, there's already the Austin American Statesman reported yesterday that those four schools were finalizing details with the Pac-12 to join the league, and I think I saw some stuff on Twitter this morning, Monday morning, that basically there's some pushback from the Pac-12, and there may not be the support necessary there to bring those schools in. Ultimately, I think they're going to do what Larry Scott tells them to do. He's obviously been way ahead of the curve on all this stuff. He's made a tremendous impact since taking over as commissioner. So if Texas can get all the details with the Longhorn Network settled out to everyone's satisfaction, I think it would happen. How quickly, you know, I would think within a week or two. If Texas doesn't go to the Pac-12, it'll be interesting to see if they would take Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, because all indications are Oklahoma wants to get to the Pac-12 as soon as possible. So we'll just have to see if Larry Scott can convince his presidents that that's the right thing to do for that league.
Two more Texas questions for you, Brett. One is, how viable was Texas to the ACC in the first place? That kind of got floated out there for, you know, a cup of coffee's time, basically, and disintegrated. Why did that happen? And was that kind of dead even before Pittsburgh-Syracuse stuff broke? And then secondarily, will the Longhorn Network kind of forever be this albatross that hangs over Texas? Like, it sounds like a great thing in theory, but it just seems like it's been so much more problematic in almost every aspect of its existence up to this point.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I talked with some sources with knowledge of what was going on with the ACC in Texas. Texas did reach out to the ACC, and I think one reason is because it felt it could find a landing spot and be able to keep the Longhorn network going. I also, you know, there also is the theory that Texas, you know, floated that out there to kind of increase their work to the Pac-12. If the Pac-12 thought that Texas had another option, then maybe they may work with Texas on how to make the Longhorn network fold into the all the Pac-12 media deals. But you're right. It's going to be interesting ultimately to see what happens with Texas because of the Longhorn network. You know, is Texas going to swallow its pride and kind of either totally revamp the Longhorn network or basically kill it to go to another conference? That's a huge unknown. Obviously, it's, you know, it was a huge moneymaker for Texas. It was, you know, groundbreaking landmark that they were able to do this, but it almost, you know, it's almost the reason that everything has happened, because Texas A&M, you know, was fed up with Texas and has been all along, but they kind of decided they'd put up with it. And then, you know, Dave Brown of ESPN went on a radio show and started talking about how they were going to televise recruits and show highlights. And that basically, that was, I think, the tipping point, and that sent Texas A&M to the SEC. And now we see all the dominoes that have followed after that.
All right. What about timetables for when schools can leave? You know, the Big East apparently has this, 27-month notice that you have to give if you're leaving. So are we looking at the first? Because here's the thing. Everyone's talking about all these schools leaving and all these conferences forming and all that stuff. But it doesn't look like the timetables are going to match up, because the Pac-12, Pac-16, whatever you want to call it, and whatever schools might defect from the Big 12, that seems to be something that could be more swiftly taken care of than the Big East schools leaving for the ACC. Because I would assume right now that, let's say, UConn and Rutgers, those are the two names that are floated out there to be next in joining the ACC. I would assume all sorts of litigation is going on to make that transition as difficult as possible for the Big East. Specifically, I'm sure there are already God knows how many rules and contracts in place in wake of what happened in 2003 with, you know, Boston College, Miami, and, you know, Virginia Tech's huge exodus.
Yeah, the Big East does have a, you know, $5 million, 27-month notice to leave the conference. Basically, the 27 months is meaningless.
Okay.
If you're the Big East, and for this reason, if you're the Big East, do you want Pittsburgh and Syracuse playing in your league for two more years? Now, you could hold them to that, but then you got to look at the Big East. They're going to be, you know, they're going to be trying to add members if the Pac-16 happens. So if you're going to have to wait 2 years for Pitt and Syracuse to leave, then are you going to bring in new members while Pitt and Syracuse are still there? I mean, it's a bad situation for everybody. You know, it's kind of like getting jilted by a girlfriend, I guess. Do you really want
exactly.
her around for two more years
exactly.
while you're already dating somebody else? You know, move out of the house. All right? I want to bring somebody else in. So, you know, that's why, you know, it's you know, on the surface, a 27-month notice looks good. But in reality, with the way schools are shifting from conference to conference, it really doesn't make sense. You want them gone from your league. You want the new members to come in so you can build that league. So I'm sure something would be negotiated, whether it's just an agreement that they'll overlook that, or whether it's some kind of monetary fee to make that 27-month thing go away. That's what will happen. But, you know, the ACC on the conference call, they all, you know, said all the right things. We will respect the Big East withdrawal plans, and we will live up to that. But they all know full well that the Big East isn't going to hold them to the 27-month notice, because they want to bring in new folks as well.
All right, and you know, amid all this change, I guess the SEC is being relatively quiet, but they are kind of sitting at an odd number right now. You know, with A&M joining, that's 13. I tweeted out on Sunday that if I was West Virginia, I would be kind of, you know, at the SEC's window, just like John Cusack, and say anything with the boombox over my head. That's going to have, I mean, the SEC's got to target a 14th school, right? And do you foresee SEC going after 16 if the Pac-12 does, in fact, bloat to 16 teams?
I mean, Matt, that's a big question. That's going to be the next domino. I personally think it's going to be Missouri. I've talked to some people that are in tight at West Virginia, and they swear it's going to be West Virginia. I could see West Virginia fits the SEC profile, and you know that's a compliment, not a derogatory statement. But their fan base is unreal. The support they have. Obviously, they've got a good product on the field. But Missouri brings a TV market. You know, St. Louis. And again, it brings an area of the country that the SEC is not in, which, you know, expansion 101, you want to expand somewhere that you're not already located to bring in new revenue. So that certainly will be interesting what the SEC does with number 14. I think they were shocked by the ACC being proactive, because I think the SEC was going to try to target some ACC schools. Will they be able to do that now since the ACC increased their withdrawal fee to $20 million?
Yeah.
You know, we'll have to wait and see. But certainly the SEC's at the top of the food chain. Whatever Mike Sly wants to do, he usually does it. But, you know, did the ACC kind of put a hamper in their plans by this proactive measure by grabbing a couple of Big East teams? We'll have to wait and see. But I think that's the next thing to look at after the Pac-12, Pac-16 gets settled. Does the SEC go to 16? And Jim Delaney's told Pete Thamel twice now in the past few weeks they are staying at 12. They're happy at 12. Is Delaney playing poker, or is he telling the truth? We'll have to find out. But I think that's the next thing we need to monitor.
Yeah, it's just a little too foggy to see that far down the road right now with the Big 12, the Big 10, and what they're going to do. I agree. Now let's get some opinion from you, Brett, because you've done all this fantastic reporting and really been at the forefront of it. But you know, just what's your take on all that's happened and what is to be in college sports? I mean, Dodd's column today is fantastic. He kind of just puts a clown suit on so many of these college leaders who really aren't looking out for the best interest of so many players that don't play football or basketball. When you really think about the logistics of these schools playing, like, you know, the Oklahoma volleyball team having to travel to Seattle to play Washington's volleyball team. You know, they just don't seem to be looking out for the best interest of the education, which they love to preach. So obviously hypocrisy comes and all that stuff. But what is kind of your overarching take on what's happening here and how college sports is changing forever and in a way that we've never seen before?
It just shows how important money is. It's, you know, money makes the world go round. It's nothing new. And that's why all these schools and conferences are reacting this way to be put in the best financial position. As far as the Olympic sports and having to travel across country, I'm sure conferences will change the way that they do things. Instead of having home and home, you know, meets, maybe they'll have four teams go to one school and they'll kind of have a round robin over 2 days or something.
And we've got to jump in here with a bit of a rough edit. Brett's phone actually dropped out about 5 seconds after the end of that right there. And he's obviously ridiculously busy today after breaking so much news in regard to all sorts of realignment over the weekend. And just wrapping up the podcast real quick, you know, we're getting to a point where plenty of people are already blocking out conference realignment. Those two words I wrote on the blog Monday morning are becoming as cringeworthy as Brett Favre. But unfortunately, this is just going to be the nature of college sports, and it won't even be the backdrop. I mean, this will be at the forefront of most conversation within college sports over the next at least 2 or 3 months, and it could go beyond that depending on which teams go where. And then it won't even really disappear after that, because we'll still have the formality of teams switching conferences and kind of just getting into their new houses, so to speak. So this culture change, we're really only at the beginning of. There are still plenty of programs and schools that are going to swap allegiances very soon. For all we know, there could be a handful that have already done that informally, and we're just waiting on you know, the paperwork to be filed, so to speak. So for anyone listening that's, you know, huge fans of college basketball and college football, one or the other, this is just the start. I mean, there's still so much to be reported on, to be written about, to be reacted to, and for us to adjust to. And it's a little odd because it doesn't really feel like college sports. And this could also tie into what I talked with Taylor Branch about last week and really the NCAA, you know, as a whole, and maybe this is all kind of interconnected in some big, obscure way. But, yeah, this is a complete change from what we've known college sports to be for the past 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and it'll continue to change. And in a way, it always will. I mean, it's kind of expanding and shrinking. Conferences have never been, obviously, for the past 50, 60 years, they've never been contiguous with the same teams. We've had, you know, the Big 8 and then the Big 12. We've seen what the Pac-10 has done in the ACC, what happened with the Big East and the ACC at the beginning of the last decade. And so for maybe the next 20 years, we have four super conferences until a group of schools decide they don't want to do this anymore. They break off and we go back to six. You know, it's kind of like continental shift within our actual, you know, with on planet Earth and how it's always constantly moving. Maybe that's kind of the pattern we're set to see so long as the NCAA looms over college sports as we see it. But anyway, thanks for listening. Appreciate it. We'll get back on later this week with some more guests. And won't make all the focus of the podcast on conference realignment, but it is dictating the news right now. And so I wanted to get guys that are clued in. You know, and it's great that we have CBS Sports and some of our guys are really doing some really great work. Parrish and Goodman have done some good stuff breaking news on this front as well. And I'm sure we'll continue to get more reaction. So check back in. I'll try and keep it varied, but still give you the newsworthy stuff, and I hope you enjoy it. Feel free to contact me if you have any questions or you want anything on the podcast. You can reach me on Twitter at Matt Norlander, or you can email me, matt.norlander@cbsinteractive.com. Hope you're doing well, and thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you soon.